Welcome back, everybody. Today's deep dive takes us into the fascinating world of the marsh fritillary butterfly.
Oh yeah, a real beauty.
Yeah, we've got some research here that zeroes in on the things that affect the survival of this threatened species, and most importantly, how we can ensure they continue to thrive.
It's a pretty cool case study. You know, it's not just butterflies.
Right.
We're looking at those subtle changes in an ecosystem and how they can cause a huge ripple effect across the board.
Okay.
Fascinating stuff.
Let's jump right in. First things first, can you give us a little intro to the marsh fritillary? Like, what is it exactly?
Okay, so.
For folks who are maybe hearing about it for the first time.
Sure. So the marsh fritillary, or Euphydria zarenia, if you want to get all Latin about it, is a gorgeous butterfly found in grasslands throughout Europe.
Okay.
But there's a catch.
Oh.
They're unfortunately facing some very serious threats to their survival.
Mm.
And that's precisely why they've got this double whammy of protection. Yep, they're under the EU Habitats and Species Directive.
Wow.
And the Berne Convention.
Wow. Double protection. That definitely sounds like they're in serious trouble. What is it that makes them so vulnerable?
Well, one major factor is their very particular diet.
Picky eaters, huh?
You could say that the caterpillars rely solely on the devil's bit scabious plant for their food.
Okay.
And another thing, unlike those butterflies that have multiple generations each year.
Right.
The marsh fritillary only have one.
Mm.
So their adults are only around from late May to June.
Oh, so if anything were to happen to those devil's bit scabious plants, the entire generation is basically toast. That's a lot of pressure on those plants.
Exactly. And that brings us to the research we're looking at today.
Okay.
This particular study was done on this really neat island called Gotland in the Baltic Sea.
Oh, cool.
It's kind of a haven for the marsh fritillary.
Really?
Yeah. They have these incredible calcareous grasslands there.
Calcareous?
It basically means that the soil is super rich in calcium carbonate, you know, creating like the perfect conditions for these butterflies.
Wow. It sounds like a butterfly paradise. So what did the researchers actually do?
Well, they took their study area and divided it up.
Okay.
Some sections were grazed by cattle and others were left ungrazed.
Okay.
This way they could directly compare how the butterflies were doing in each environment.
Oh, clever. Makes sense.
What's really cool, though, is they went the extra mile.
What'd they do?
They meticulously tracked where each female butterfly laid her eggs.
Whoa, that's dedication.
92 egg batches documented in total.
92 batches. Yeah, that must have taken forever. What did all that egg-laying tracking tell us?
Okay, so first of all, it confirmed just how crucial the devil's bit scabious is for these butterflies.
Okay.
I mean, the females overwhelmingly chose the larger plants with tons of leaves.
Sure.
Makes sense, right?
Yeah.
More food equals a better chance of survival for the caterpillars.
Oh, absolutely. Survival of the fittest, right? But this study also looked at those microclimates you talked about earlier, didn't it? What role did they play in where the butterflies decided to lay their eggs?
Oh, yeah. That's where things get even more interesting.
Okay.
The study found that female butterflies were, like, super picky about the conditions within the grassland.
Oh, really?
They really liked those spots with shorter vegetation around less grass cover, and particularly south-facing edges.
South-facing.
You know, the ones that are kind of sheltered and get bathed in sunlight.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So they're looking for those little warm pockets within the grassland, right? Kind of like little nurseries for their eggs.
Precisely. They want those ideal nurseries to give those eggs the best possible start.
Smart moms.
But here's where things get a little bit unexpected, especially when you look at the grazed areas.
Okay.
They found that the taller patches of devil's bit scabious were actually even more attractive to the butterflies for laying eggs.
Wait, really? I thought they preferred those shorter spots with less cover. What's going on there?
Well, it seems like it's because only the toughest devil's bit scabious plants could survive the intense grazing from the cattle.
Ah, so it's like a trade-off.
Yeah. You get these taller patches popping up with these big, healthy host plants that are just irresistible to the egg-laying females.
That's so interesting. So they're adapting their strategy based on how much the area's been grazed.
Yeah.
Makes you wonder though, right?
No.
All this talk about the ideal egg-laying spots, it makes me think about the actual survival rate of those eggs and caterpillars once they hatch. Like, how many of them are actually making it?
That's a fantastic question, and it's where this study takes a bit of a somber turn.
Uh-oh.
The researchers didn't just map out where the eggs were laid. They also tracked the fate of 27 egg batches over time.
Okay.
Looking how many survived, from those tiny eggs to the vulnerable little larvae.
I'm on the edge of my seat. What did they find?
the overall survival rate was less than 5%.
Less than 5%.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That means that only about 1 in 20 caterpillars actually makes what a brutal world they live in. What was causing this huge decline, especially in those grazed areas?
Well, we're going to dive into that more in part two, but let's just say those seemingly perfect egg-laying spots, those taller, robust, devil's bit scabious plants, came with a hidden cost for the marsh fritillary.
Ooh, a cliffhanger. Can't wait to hear more about that in the next part.
Yeah, that 5% survival rate, it really does paint a rather grim picture, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
And remember how we talked about those taller, tougher, devil's bit scabious plants in the grazed areas?
Right, those ones that seem like such a good thing at first.
Exactly. Well, it turns out those areas were also hot spots for the cattle.
Uh-oh.
You know, not just for grazing, but also for trampling.
Oh, no. So it was like a trap for those poor caterpillars.
Pretty much.
Drawn to the best food, but then accidentally crushed by the very thing that helped create it.
It's kind of a cruel irony, isn't it?
It really is.
Sadly, the researchers think that this trampling by cattle was a major factor in the low survival rates they observed in the grazed areas.
I see.
They actually found that nearly 9 times more larvae survived until March. You know, after hibernation.
Right.
In the ungrazed areas compared to those grazed ones.
Wow, 9 times, that's a massive difference.
It is. It's a stark reminder that even well-intentioned management practices can have these unintended consequences.
Yeah, especially for sensitive species like the marsh fritillary.
Exactly.
So how do we balance the need for grassland management with the need to protect these butterflies? It seems like a real dilemma.
It is a tough one. But the study does offer some potential solutions.
Oh, good.
It suggests that rotational grazing or mowing, you know, where you kind of switch things up.
Okay.
Combined with leaving certain areas completely untouched could be the key.
So basically creating like a patchwork of different habitats within the grassland?
Precisely. Some areas are grazed or mowed, which encourages those strong devil's bit scabious plants.
Right.
But then other areas are left to their own devices, providing those safe havens for the caterpillars.
It's about finding that balance, isn't it?
Mm.
Between managing the land effectively, but also ensuring that the species that depend on it can survive.
Absolutely. And the encouraging thing is that these findings from the Gotland study, they're not isolated.
Oh, really?
Similar recommendations are being made all over Europe for marsh fritillary conservation.
Wow. So it's like the scientific community is coming together to say, hey, this mosaic approach, this might be the way to go.
Exactly. It's about moving away from that one-size-fits-all mentality.
Right.
And adopting a more nuanced strategy that takes the whole ecosystem into account.
This deep dive has been so eye-opening. It's amazing how these seemingly small changes can have such a huge impact on the entire ecosystem. It makes you think, though, doesn't it?
About.
All this talk about the marsh fritillary, it's making me think about all the other species out there facing similar challenges.
Oh, absolutely.
What does all this mean for the average person you know, someone who's not a butterfly expert or a conservationist? What can they do to help?
Well, for starters, I think it all begins with awareness.
Okay.
Next time you find yourself strolling through a grassland or even just a park with some grassy patches, take a closer look.
Yeah.
You might be surprised by just how much life is teeming beneath the surface.
I know. I'm definitely guilty of just seeing a sea of green. But now I'm going to be on the lookout for those devil's bit scabious plants.
Good.
Imagining the hidden world of the marsh fritillary unfolding right there.
That's the spirit.
Yeah.
And hey, you know, beyond just observing, think about supporting those organizations that are working tirelessly to protect these vital habitats.
Yeah, for sure.
Even small actions like donating to a conservation group or volunteering a bit of your time.
Right.
Those things can make a real difference.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we can also advocate for policies that promote sustainable land management practices, can't we?
Oh, 100%. Things like rotational grazing or mowing.
Yeah.
Those not only benefit butterflies, but they also support a wider range of biodiversity.
Right.
And contribute to healthier ecosystems as a whole.
It all comes back to that interconnectedness, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Recognizing that we are part of this intricate web of life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Our choices, they have ripple effects. And by understanding those connections, we can all play a part in shaping a future where both butterflies and humans can thrive.
It really is amazing, isn't it? How everything's connected.
It is.
You know, we started with this tiny little butterfly.
Right.
But this deep dive has shown us just how complex these ecological relationships are.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Habitat, microclimate management, survival.
Mm-hmm.
It's all intertwined.
It all comes back to that big picture thinking,
yeah.
You know, that holistic approach to conservation.
Exactly.
It's not just about protecting individual species in isolation.
Right, yeah.
It's about understanding that intricate web of life that supports them.
Yeah, it's like this giant puzzle
It is.
where every single piece matters. And as we saw with the marsh fritillary, sometimes those seemingly small, insignificant pieces, like a little south-facing edge or a patch of ungrazed grassland, can have the most profound impact.
They really can. What's so cool about this research is that it sparks all these new questions, questions that go way beyond just the marsh fritillary.
What kind of
It
question?
makes you think, could this mosaic habitat model be applied to different ecosystems? Could similar approaches work for other threatened butterfly species?
That's a great point. It really makes you think about all the other species out there that are facing similar challenges. If we can figure out how to create these win-win situations for both wildlife and how we use the land, that could have massive implications for conservation everywhere.
Absolutely. And that's where the real work comes in, putting this research into practice, translating it into action on the ground.
It's one thing to have the knowledge, but then actually implementing it, that's a whole other challenge.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to take a lot of collaboration between scientists, conservationists, policymakers, even everyday citizens.
Yeah, everybody's got a role to play. So what can our listeners do to help? Besides, being on the lookout for those devil's bit scabious plants on their next walk in nature.
Well, I think staying informed is a really good starting point. There's a wealth of information out there online and through organizations like Butterfly Conservation Europe. Learning about the challenges butterflies face in your area, it can help you make more conscious choices about how you interact with the environment.
That's a great idea. And don't underestimate the power of actually getting involved.
Oh, totally.
Even just volunteering a few hours a month for a local conservation project
Even just a little bit of time.
can make a tangible difference.
Yeah, it's easy to feel overwhelmed sometimes.
I know what you mean.
The scale of these environmental challenges can feel daunting.
Yeah, for sure.
But every little action counts.
Right.
Every bit of awareness we raise contributes to something much bigger.
It's like we're all part of this collective effort.
Yeah, we're not powerless in this. We can all do our part to ensure a healthy future for the planet.
And for these beautiful creatures like the marsh fritillary.
Exactly. So to all our listeners out there, as we wrap up this deep dive into the world of the marsh fritillary, keep exploring, keep learning, and most importantly, keep those butterfly wings fluttering.
I love it. Until next time, everybody, happy deep diving.